This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour World Report recorded on Friday, March 22nd, 2024. I'm Marc Boulanger. In the report this week, the international struggle for equal pay for work of equal value. The Labour Start report about union events and singing.
A woman's place is in her union. We organize and stand for equal rights.
This is Radio Labour.
To make sure that we don't have to wait 168 years to achieve equal pay for work of equal value.
That is Chidi King, the branch chief gender equality, diversity and inclusion at the International Labour Organization. The ILO is the UN agency focused on matters of work in the world. Ms. King is the former director of the Equality Department at the International Trade Union Confederation. The ITUC is the organization which represents national labor centers such as the Ghana Trade Union Congress and the AFL-CIO in the United States. She was speaking to participants of a seminar in New York organized by the Equal Pay International Coalition, known by its acronym EPIC.
We have a stubborn global gender pay gap of 20%. And in some countries and regions, this gap is even larger, as it is for racialized women, women with disabilities and migrants. And we really have no hope of closing this pay gap without addressing the norms and discrimination that result in gender-segregated labour markets and reassessing the value we give to work, which is done mainly by women. CSW 68 has focused our attention on alleviating poverty and strengthening institutions from a gender perspective. Lifting women out of poverty means providing the conditions for women to thrive economically, no matter their circumstances, backgrounds, or identities. It means providing the conditions for women to come together collectively, strengthening employers and workers' organizations, and promoting the right of employers and workers to engage in collective bargaining. We have seen employers and workers come together through social dialogue to objectively value or revalue jobs and pay women their true worth. We've seen employers and workers agree to be transparent on pay, even in the absence of legislation. And where collective bargaining is strong, we see narrower gender pay and pensions gaps. Collective bargaining has also improved wages and other working conditions for the many women working in the informal economy. And we've seen this with domestic workers and agricultural workers. And we certainly can't talk about gender-based occupational segregation and the value of work mainly done by women without talking about the care economy. 70% of care workers are women, but they're concentrated in low-paid jobs, working conditions and little decision-making autonomy. And this is especially true for the many racialized and migrant women in the care workforce. Their work is essential, but little valued. Women provide more than three quarters of all unpaid care and domestic work, essential to our health, our well-being and our survival, yet unseen and undervalued. And the care leave policies and services that can uplift women's economic participation and outcomes are too often out of reach of those who need them most. And the ILO will discuss these matters at its International Labour Conference in June this year. We must act now and we must act together. Today, EPIC has more than 60 members. And we welcome all of you to join us with your experience and expertise to make EPIC a powerful game changer for gender equality and social justice, and to make sure that we don't have to wait another 268 years to achieve equal pay for work of equal value.
One of the sponsors of the EPIC conference held recently in New York was the Government of Canada. Siobhan Vipond is the Executive Vice President of the Canadian Labour Congress.
Canadian unions have long recognized that there's no silver bullet for eliminating gender wage gap, as the systemic barriers are complex and interdependent, especially for women who face intersecting forms of discrimination. And while collective bargaining has helped narrow gender pay gaps for union women, we understand that we have to focus on the undervaluing of women's work. Canadian unions pushed for the federal government to introduce proactive pay equity legislation that would require employers to identify and correct wage discrimination. Previously, it would take decades for human rights complaints to make their way through the process. Many women retired or even passed away while waiting for their complaints to be resolved and for corrective payments to be distributed. In late 2018, the Federal Pay Equity Act was finally tabled, and Canadian unions know this is one tool in the toolbox. To narrow gender wage gaps, we also need to address other systemic barriers for women's economic justice. And we are making progress. After five decades of advocacy and campaigning, we have historic federal investment and beginning of a national system of quality, affordable, and inclusive childcare. We've made progress towards preventing and addressing harassment and violence, starting with the ratification of ILO Convention 190. We've negotiated paid domestic violence leave and have won paid domestic violence leave for workers in almost every jurisdiction in Canada. We have seen some incredibly powerful gains made by women workers in bargaining, gains that have unfortunately required courageous job action in both public and private sector workplaces. And we've also seen a ramp up in organizing in low wage employment sectors dominated by women, including retail and long term care. And we know that when women are united and they stand up and take that action, they get the attention that they need so that they are pushing so we can increase this balance. And so there is lots of victories there that we could share. But we know that that is the balance of power that unions bring to the table so that we can get closer to closing the gender pay gap. We're all exposed as we're children to our parent, to our mother's unpaid work. But it took the pandemic for the world to kind of really wake up and see, underscore how essential women's labor, paid and unpaid, was in terms of the well-being of our communities and our economies. And in Canada, one in five workers works in the broad category of care. And the work is undervalued. It's marked with poor working conditions. There's an exposure to violence and harassment and other health and safety risks, limited job security and access to benefits, including paid sick leave. And because many of these workers are Black, Indigenous, women of color, and recent immigrants, the undervaluing of this work also contributes to the wider wage gaps for marginalized workers. Now, to raise the wages and recognize the value of jobs in care, as well as other undervalued feminized sectors like retail, food services, and other frontline sectors, we need to increase minimum wage to a more livable wage. We need to enact, expand, and enforce pay equity and pay transparency legislation in every jurisdiction. We need to remove barriers to forming unions and promote access to collective bargaining, legislating card-based certification, prevent contract flipping, and look to broader-based and sectoral bargaining. We need to ramp up investment in childcare, home care, and long-term care systems and establish standards for better wages and working conditions for care workers. Government needs to take action to ensure that care jobs are good jobs and that care services are available for everyone who depends on care. The disproportionately high number of women living in poverty and their lack of access to care services are deeply interconnected. Developing a national comprehensive strategy for Canada's care economy would go a long way for easing the burden of that care, both paid and unpaid, that is placed on women. So we've made strides towards achieving women's economic justice and closing the gender pay gaps, but there is still much work to do. Canada's unions remain committed to the work and will continue to maintain pressure on decision makers and keep women's economic justice in the public agenda. When work for equal value is compensated equally for everyone, only then will our work be done. And until then, we will keep on fighting.
Here with his report about union events around the world is Labour Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
This week, our top story section included links to an announcement from the Finnish union SAK, that the strikes it has organized against the program of that country's right-wing government have been extended. Statements from global unions reaffirming their commitment to support the unions struggling against the military regime in Myanmar. And our founding editor, Eric Lee, has a new episode of our podcast out, this one being an interview with a longtime Colombian solidarity activist about the new feeling of optimism sweeping the labor movement there after the country's most recent national elections. But my favorite top story of the week was from Tunisia, where the UGTT, the country's central labor body, is taking on an increasingly authoritarian president. Why is it my fave for the week? Well, because the UGTT is a force to be reckoned with in Tunisia. You may remember that the union won the Nobel Peace Prize a few years ago for the role it played in bringing down the Ben Ali regime. On our Working Women news page, you'll find details about the organizing happening in the fields of northern Italy, where women migrant workers are leading the charge against everything from wage theft to sexual assault. And we brought you the news from Zimbabwe, where the ZCTU, the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, has put forward an 11-point program on behalf of all women workers. Flip over to the Spanish language edition of our Working Women page and you'll find details of how and why the global labor movement is participating in the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women, including representations made by the International Domestic Workers Federation. In French, you'll find details of how women members of Les Métallos, the union representing workers at an aluminum refinery in Canada, are strategizing on how to recruit and retain more women workers. Stories on our health and safety page in NewsWire this week include how the death of an Argentinian agricultural worker from heatstroke has mobilized rural unions. The lethal effects of global heating are well known, and the impact on workers' health is becoming more and more acute and an issue for trade unions. And, of course, for employers and union-friendly governments, as in the United States. There, several states have enacted laws rolling back workers' right to water and cooling breaks when temperatures rise above a set threshold. Why actively work to make workers less safe and ensure that more die as temperatures rise? In the U.S. states of Georgia and Texas, the answer is easy. Because as temperatures rise, more breaks will be taken. More breaks result in lower productivity. And to those, and too many other governments, productivity and the profits that come with it are more important than lives. Other heat-related workplace safety stories this week include a study in India detailing the effects of working in high temperatures on women workers. Those effects include an increased risk of miscarriage and of fetal damage. Our current photo of the week comes to us from the Dominican Republic, where for months, ADP, the teachers' union in the Dominican Republic, has been organizing short strikes to draw attention to the illnesses being suffered by students and school staff as a result of the poor quality water supplied to most schools. LaborStart hosts online solidarity actions at the request of unions around the world. This week, we'd like to highlight an urgent appeal for online solidarity with trade union activists in Egypt. 3,700 women workers at a garment factory in that country struck in an effort to improve their meager wages and actually get the wage increase that had been promised to them. Strike leaders have been arrested, and the strikers all have the threat of dismissal for absenteeism, in other words, dismissal for striking, hanging over their heads. Those 3,700 workers are calling on us all to send a solidarity message as they continue their fight. If you can spare just a few seconds, you can do your part in this struggle by sending a solidarity message. Look for details of this and other campaigns on our site. This is Derek Blackadder from LaborStart, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here is Union Nation with A Woman's Place.
A woman's place is in her union. We organize and stand for equal rights, hardships, and discrimination. Ongoing battles we continue to fight, dedicated to get the job done. A woman's place is in her union, fearless and productive, embracing and strong. I'm a union woman, and this is where I belong. Union woman, that's what I am. Mother to a future guaranteed to take a stand. A union woman, on me you can depend. I'll lift you up when you need a helping hand. Walk with me, brothers and sisters in this nation. Let the world know all about our situations. We'll overcome all the evils in the workplace and make this world better for the union race. I'm a union woman, this is where I belong.
And that's it. Labor news you can use. You can find our newscasts and features at radiolabor.net. I'm Mark Boulanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.